It's time to take off on the Award Travel 101 podcast. Helping you maximize your travel rewards, no matter your destination or budget. Now here are your hosts, Award Travel 101 Community Managers, Angie Sparks and Joseph Petrovic, to help you do extraordinary things on ordinary money.
When it comes to award travel, earning points is easier than redeeming them for the best value. Rather than spending hours per trip searching on your own, let Thrifty Traveler Premium's army of flight analysts do the work for you with their customized premium alerts. Since we're seeing award space to more locations than we've seen in years, you will know that you have a partner you can trust watching out for you and that you're getting a great deal every single day from Thrifty Traveler's premium alert service.
Whether using miles or points, or you're just looking for a cheap cash flight, Thrifty Traveler Premium will send customized alerts just for you. Just recently, with the help of Thrifty Traveler's premium alerts, I was able to book the brand new Japan Airlines A350-1000 in business class to Tokyo for just 60,000 American Advantage miles and $5.60. I've booked previous alerts like Emirates business class for Milan on the A380 for 73,000 points, Iberia business class to Venice for 34,000 points, and business class on ITAs, or you might recognize it as ITA, brand new A330-900neo for 54,000 points from Rome to New York City. So if you want more premium deal award alerts sent straight to your inbox, head on over to thriftytraveler.com and use promo code AT10 for $10 off your first year and tell us where you're hoping Thrifty Traveler Premium will take you. And we're back for episode 55 of the Award Travel 101 podcast. My name's Joseph Petrovic, and I'm with
Angie Sparks. How are you feeling this week? You got your voice back?
Yes, I did. It was a slow build to fevers and lots of water and tea, trying to keep my voice intact because I did lose it over the weekend. But thankfully, it's back, and I just have little hints of drainage left and doing well. So let's hop into the post of the week.
Well, you flagged this one, so I'll let you talk about it. It's from Marianne Michalek Chauvin. We're guessing on some of these names that we have in the group, people.
Yeah, and she asked, why is my car rental more expensive with an Amex discount code than without? Have you seen this before?
I have. So when you have an Amex Platinum card, it gives you status with Avis, Hertz, and National. And you know, when you connect your Amex Platinum card to those loyalty programs, it automatically does one of those, populates a discount code from your Amex Platinum into your loyalty account. So whenever you go to search for a rental car directly on that website, it gives you the quote with that discount code. And often it is more expensive to use that discount code than just to not use it. But my issue is I don't book like that. I usually book my rental car with Costco because I get, free second driver all the time. And then I track it on AutoSlash. And, at the end of the day, I go back into the place where I end up booking and I put my loyalty number in there and get all my benefits. So I think I saw it in the very beginning when I first got an Amex Platinum and realized it wasn't getting me anything. I'm like, well, this is dumb. I'm going back to the way I've always done it. What about you?
Yeah, I use it frequently with National. And so the status with National is something that I've enjoyed and I've gotten a lot of nice vehicles from it. But the thing that ends up happening is that I realized sometime early on that that is the case where when you add that discount code, it's not really a discount code relative to the best price. The best price may be significantly better without any discount code. And then there are other discount codes which truly offer a discount to the everyday pricing. So I always just remove it. And it's just a reminder here that just because there is a discount code applied, it does not mean that you will always be getting the best deal. So check your rates regardless of whatever you do.
Exactly. So let's talk about the news this week. We're not going to go through all these, but every month, Air France and KLM's Flying Blue program has their award sweet spots, their Flying Blue promo awards. I don't think there's anything terribly exciting this year unless you're an economy flyer. I think last month they had some really nice business class flights from North America to Europe, but for February. It's all economy, but they're always worth looking for, especially if you don't mind sitting in the back of the plane for a cheap flight to Europe.
Yeah, I think one of the things we get a lot of questions on in the Award Travel 101 community is that, you know, they think they have to only use the Flying Blue program for flights with Air France and KLM. And of course, we know that the Flying Blue program can be used for much more than that. Of course, they've recently sweetened the deal, making their flights to Europe very much on par with Virgin Atlantic. So if you can find a nonstop or even some connecting flights over to Europe, they're at 50,000 is where their starting point is, which is, I think, about 10% lower than it used to be. I think it used to be 55,000 miles over in business class. But you have also awards that are 15 to 20,000 in economy. So not everybody is always looking for those business class awards. And certainly if you have a route where you're only in the air for 6-7 hours anyway, maybe it's not the worst thing. It's not something that I know everyone wants to do, but it's where the bulk of us fly, is in the back of the plane. And if you can get your whole family over to Europe for 60 to 80,000 miles, you know, that might be the deal you're looking for.
And they have lower in taxes and fees too than what Virgin has. Allison had a post in the group the other day. She had been helping someone look for a flight, and she compared Virgin to, I think, British Airways, Delta, and Flying Blue, and same exact flight on all four, you know, all four programs. Maybe British Airways wasn't in there, but same exact flight. And it was vastly different what the points price was, as well as what the taxes and fees were. So another reminder, check. Don't just assume like, oh, I found this flight, this is awesome, because it might be better somewhere else.
Yeah, and we'll link this into the show notes so that you can go read the post on Award Wallet. There are a lot of cool little things that members should be aware of. Next, we have Amex adds family restrictions to yet another American Express branded card.
Ugh, the hits keep coming with them. They really do. So this follows the previous one on the, actually on the charge cards, which makes it even weirder. Although the green card's a charge card too, isn't it? I'm thinking of another one. That now, if you already have an Amex Gold card or an Amex Platinum card, you are not eligible to get a sign-up bonus on a green card. So it really means you kind of have to pay attention to your long-term strategy. If you want all three of these cards, you have to start with green and then get gold and then get platinum. Because if you start the other way around, you are, sorry, out of luck.
Yes, that's the important part here, is just strategize. Make sure you know what the particular lineup is. If you want that green card, you want that gold card, you want that platinum card, make sure that you get them in that order, green, gold, and platinum. Otherwise, you can get the cards, you just may not be eligible for the welcome offers.
Exactly. And I know people that they want the gold card so desperately, they're willing to forego a sign-up bonus. You know, I'm an authorized user on P2's gold card. I don't need to have my own that desperately. So I'm going to hold off until I might ever be eligible for a sign-up bonus. And since I don't plan to get rid of my personal platinum card anytime soon, that will probably be never. Unless they change the rules on us again. So the next thing is, and this one's really painful, and this, there was lots of crying and hand wringing in all the communities this week. Turkish Airlines is doing a major devaluation of their miles and smiles, and they have introduced new award charts. And so, you know, say goodbye to that cheap flight to Hawaii and those, you know, really cheap business class flights to Europe. Book them now. I can't remember what the date is for when this goes into effect.
I'm fairly certain that it is the day before this episode airs. So it won't help anybody.
Oh, sorry.
Unfortunately, it happened in between recording of episodes. So it'll be after the fact when this is, you know, when this episode goes live. However, it is just a note that, you know, these programs can change their minds at any point in time. And there are a reason that we will be getting into the topic we have later about using transferable points over some of these fixed points, or tying them up into a program speculatively sometimes can go wrong.
Exactly.
And to leave the news off in a little happier note, WordWallet has published 683 different United routes that you can book with Aeroplan for just 6,000 points. I checked mine and there are 11 different routes, and you could kind of double that because it goes each way. So it's from and to Cleveland. There are 11 routes that are bookable under that 500 mile range restriction where Aeroplan charges the 6,000 points, which is significantly better than United because most of these same flights on United used to have a chart for under 400 to 500 mile range and they charge 10,000 miles. But ever since the readjustment back last spring, these have become more expensive at 15,000 miles for the most part.
Oh, wow. Okay, so here's the question. Do you want to go to any of those 11 places?
There are a couple of them that are useful, specifically Washington Dulles Airport. So IAD is one that you can fly nonstop. And sometimes there are flights that I want to do. I know, for example, our flight with my dad later this spring out to Europe is going to be on Iberia. And so I'm flying out of Washington Dulles and we'll connect. We ended up using his Mileage Plus miles, which were actually at that time discounted. So they were like 10,000 miles. They were closer to what they should have been. But normally, the few days before I checked that, again, I mean, it was 15,000 miles per person. So they did drop and we just used Mileage Plus. But these are something where you could have used 6,000 Aeroplan miles instead of 10 to 15,000 United Mileage Plus.
Probably more in taxes and fees, though. Yeah, and you don't have the flexibility to cancel as easily as you do with United.
That is going to be the downside, that you do have a little bit higher taxes and fees, because instead of, I think it's $22 or $5.60 per person, it ends up being more around $30, $35 a person. And on top of that, again, you hit the nail on the head with the cancellation and change fees. They do have $150 change fee and $200 cancellation. So you have to be pretty certain that you're going to take that flight or be willing to walk away from it if you don't take it, because I don't think it's probably worth paying either of those to get 6,000 Aeroplan points back.
No, I'd probably just walk away from that reservation, be like, never mind, thanks, I'm done. I'm just really kind of impressed about somebody sitting down and finding 683. I'm just trying to imagine all the research that went into that. And I'm like, oh, I think I would need a nap after doing something like that.
It's one of the great reasons to have people like from Award Wallet pulling all this stuff together for us. And it's another reason to go follow the blog and see what we're talking about in the Award Travel 101 community.
So the next section, my favorite trip updates. I have absolutely nothing new to add from last week, so we will just move right on to you.
Well, in the meantime, since our last episode recorded, I was approved for my Australian e-visa. It was kind of a pain in the butt to do, but I finally got it all to work. So $13 to $14. So I can now legally enter Australia for our flight, which is about a month away or so. So I will only be on the ground for about 50 hours or so before turning back and heading home. But I'll get to meet up with Mike and his wife and a few other Award Travel 101 members. I know that I had a 101 member reach out to me not too long ago who's still scheduled to be on the same flight out to Sydney as you and I were, and now only I am. But let me talk a little bit about the e-visa process, because it was something where you had to turn on the NFC on your phone and try to scan it. And it was like the directions.
What is that? I don't even know what that is.
It's a little radio signal and you have to scan your passport. So there's a little radio chip embedded in the newer passports today. And you have to scan it for that. So it pulls the information from that. And then you had to take a photo and it wouldn't recognize, like my face didn't line up with the oval it wanted. And I kept trying to zoom in, zoom out, do all the things it kept telling me, it kept failing. And finally, I had to go shave my beard and I finally got it to work. So it was like, it was playing all these games, but like I said, it does save a lot of money because the regular visa, I think it's like somewhere between $135 and $200. So we're talking about a significant difference in cost. So just for people who are looking to go to Australia, you can do the e-visa if you're not doing any kind of complicated or business travel. You're just going to do a quick visit. And next, talk a little bit about my trip to Japan and Korea. And I really never got into it in any of the previous episodes other than to mention that I booked it. Originally, we were going to stay in Seoul longer, and now we kind of broke it up. We're going to Jeju Island, which is south. It's supposed to be like the Hawaii of Korea, of South Korea for the South Koreans. Oh, cool. So not quite as beachy from what I can see. And there's like, but there's like a lot of hiking and things that are interest there. And I think the coolest part about this is finding the flights. And you can find a discount carrier to take you there. And the flights aren't terribly expensive. I think you can find them as cheap as around $40 a ticket. But I don't, you know, we're going to be carrying bags from Japan. And we're trying not to go carry on, but you start adding these bag fees and other things like that. And I said, this is going to be a pain to kind of figure out the, you know, discount carriers. I know how they work here in the US, but how can I make it work better there? And I just decided it's easier to book Korean Airlines where I know what I'm going to get and I'm going to have the bags with 5,500 Virgin miles per person. It's speculatively transferred. We talked about this before. I like having a stash of Virgin miles. So anytime there's that 30% bonus, I'll move some membership rewards over. And for effectively 25,000 points, I booked my brother, my sister-in-law, and me, both ways from Seoul to Jeju and back for the like six different flights for 25,000 membership rewards, which converts to 33,000 miles. So it's not a huge win. It's like $620, but it's still almost 3 cents per point if you're counting that way. And it's a solid redemption on that end, and where our baggage is covered. So, you know, definitely keep an eye out for things that you may not have considered. A lot of people keep forgetting Virgin Atlantic exists. You can book SkyTeam partners and get a ton of value out of that. I look at it and say, hey, it's not that huge splashy win of ANA first or something like that. But it's a way I did not have to worry about carrying my bags or checking my bags or whatever I needed to do. I can fly Korean Air. I can fly it with 5,500 Virgin miles and I'm done. Easy enough. So super easy there. The other thing is the dollar is pretty strong against the Korean won right now. So I don't have any exciting Hyatt bookings from there. I just chose to pay cash for everything we're staying. We have two Hyatt bookings at the Grand Hyatt Seoul and Grand Hyatt Jeju Island. And the points redemption don't quite meet what I'd like to see. I know we talked that not all points have to have the highest redemption, but I like to have a little bit higher value out of the return, and I just saw cash here as the better option. So that wraps up my travel.
For the Korean flight on Virgin, were you able to do that online or did you have to call them?
No, I was able to do it right online. In fact, on last week's Weekend Earn and Burn, I shared a little snippet in the comments there of the booking and showing a screenshot of the booking in the comments.
Oh, okay. Good. Makes it easy. Although they're lovely people to talk to. Okay, moving on.
Angie, what bonuses did you get?
The Wyndham card is finished, but I am just waiting for the bonus to post. Actually, yesterday, final payment or, you know, final charge went through. Same thing with that Amex business checking bonus. It's still sitting out there showing me I'm done, but points haven't posted yet. I finally was able to get our Alaska link to work. There was something, there was just something weird with my, I don't know why. So I forwarded the link to my son by text and used his cell phone to apply on using data, not Wi-Fi, whatever. It worked. And I was approved. Yay. I still don't have the card, but that will be very, that will be an easy thing. I can, you know, that'll be an easy thing to, you know, get a nice 75,000 Alaska miles. P2 applied for the Capital One Venture X business card and he was not automatically declined. So I call that a win. He did get the "we'll let you know" message and they haven't let us know yet. Although when I logged into his account to check, you know, hey, is there a card sitting in there that I hadn't, you know, I've been waiting on, there was a message that said, we weren't able to reach you on your cell phone number. You know, can we switch to text? And I'm like, yes, please. So I'm hoping, and he said, oh, I just got a text from them. I'm like, good, you should have. I don't know, fingers crossed. It would be great for that one to come in before I have to pay the property taxes. I have had to put a deposit down for the painters. I've got to pay a plumber. So those are all going on some zero APR cards while I'm waiting for these new ones to show up. So how about you?
Yeah, not terribly exciting. My new cards are looking like your new travels right now. So there's not a lot of excitement going on there. We're about $200 from being done with Player 2's Chase Inc. Business Preferred. So that'll be a nice 100,000 point bonus. I've already received a 40,000 point referral offer. So this was, again, at the time of publishing, it was 100,000 point welcome offer. And we should finish that up here real shortly. And otherwise, I'm just putting spend everything else on my World of Hyatt business card to help retain my elite status. I know a lot of people will look at it and say, well, you could have gotten so many bonuses. And I'm considering those Alaska cards as well. And I think I'm actually even considering the Built card. I've pushed that off. And I see some opportunities where I can possibly do some things with that to, you know, earn some extra points. And with those transfer bonuses, they've been having anywhere between 75 and 150%. I think I could make it worth my while and call it 5X everywhere effectively spend. If you look at those angles on how to work that out, that could be an attractive offer just for everyday spending. So we'll kind of see where that goes. I'm trying to maintain that status. And the World of Hyatt business card, you do get 5 elite night credits for every 10,000 spent. So I'm trying to hit the 50,000 mark kind of as quickly as possible, because in addition to the elite nights towards status, once you hit 50,000, it unlocks a 10% discount on all your award stays. So you can get up to 20,000 points back on any kind of award stay once you've hit that $50,000 mark.
That's interesting. I didn't know that.
So wrapping that up, let's head over to the highlight feature, transferable over fixed points.
So this is part of our Back to the Basics series. Previously, we had discussed step one in that, which was, you know, building healthy credit. So this is step two. And this is an introduction to the types of rewards points. You know, basically, if you're every card earns something, and we're going to go over what those different options are. So the very first thing, Joe, tell us about fixed value rewards. I really don't even know what that term means.
Yeah, and many of us don't have these cards. I know I don't have any fixed value rewards cards, but cards like the U.S. Bank Altitude Reserve, the Bank of America Premium Awards, some of them carry a point value system where in one way it's inflation, I guess, proofed against devaluations because the value never changes. It's 1 to 1.5 cents. I think the U.S. Bank Altitude Reserve earns points that are worth a flat 1.5 cents each. You can use those for travel purchases and things like that to get effectively 3-4% off. I think if you earn the 3X on the Altitude Reserve in the right category, that's effectively like 4.5% off. So now some of those purchases where you maybe want to wipe them out, which is kind of like a purchase eraser card, which you'll be talking about here shortly, you can use those points to cover some costs that maybe wouldn't have been covered, quite like your other cards where you're trying to cover them with a certain amount of points. It's just using a different point type system. It's not going to go to, it's not going to transfer to a partner or do something like that.
Okay. The second type of rewards points is cashback. And really, this is kind of self-explanatory. You know, you make a charge, you earn a certain percentage on it, and you get cash back either in the form of a statement credit directly off your balance, or you get a check at the end of the year. Some of these cashback cards, when you pair them with a premium card in the same, from the same bank ecosystem, let's call it, then convert those points, that cashback can be converted to the transferable points, which we'll cover in a little bit in a few minutes. And it makes them incredibly valuable. Usually these are no fee cards. They usually have foreign transaction fees. So, but they're pretty easy to, I don't want to say easy, they're easier to be approved for things like this since they are not a premium card. So they kind of be a good like foot in your door to bank if you're just starting out for something like this.
Yeah. So what would be a good starter card for like a younger person when you say get their foot in the door?
I think the Chase Freedom card, you know, we go back to our favorite 524 rule. If you have a credit score and a decent credit score, I mean, it doesn't have to be like really great, but I think you have to maybe be around 700. I think you can get approved for the Chase Freedom cards, and that preserves, you know, that it take all of these cards will take up a slot if you're concerned about 524 and you're just starting in this hobby. But the Chase Freedom card is, especially the unlimited, easy. 1.5, everything you do. I actually had my son start this. He had a credit score because he'd been an authorized user on our Amex Platinum card. And when he graduated college and he moved out to California and he was ready to get, you know, his own credit card, not be an authorized user on one of ours, I'm like, start with this. You have a better shot, I think, of getting approved. And long term, when you listen to me, I think this would be a good fit. If you don't really have a good credit score yet, or, you know, maybe you're a student, Discover, I think, has some really good student cards. And, you know, heck, I think I started with a Discover card as well, way, way, very long time ago. That's not our favorite card, is it?
Real quick, as an add-in here, you'd mentioned on the last time we talked about putting a charge on that Discover card, because I hadn't, and that was my oldest card. And I got just days after that, it was like you were telling the future. And I got a note from them saying, hey, we evaluate these every once in a while. And we noticed over the last 18 months, you haven't spent a single cent with us, and we're going to close your account if you don't do something soon. So I looked back, and it has actually been well over 4 years since I made my last purchase on that card. And I promptly made a purchase just to retain that. It's not a card that I typically use, but once in a while, and during this particular cycle, it happened to have 5% cash back on dining. So, you know, I'm kind of doing okay on my points and miles balances. So I took advantage of 5% cash back on dining.
Very nice. Good. I'm glad. I don't like to speak things out into the universe, though. So I guess I'm going to have to be careful here. So the next kind is, you're not in this universe yet, but it's a purchase eraser card. And Capital One made these famous. And this is, you know, all the commercials like, oh, you know, no blackout dates, do, you know, buy whatever plane ticket you want. And then you can erase the purchase. And basically what it is you're taking the points that you've earned on the card and you're giving yourself a statement credit. Capital One, it's generally, I believe, 100 points per dollar spent. Super easy to do. And that's, you know, my three oldest Capital One cards are all purchase eraser cards. And I still use them. One of my zero APR cards that I'm using for these expenses, that's one of those. So I'll have some extra Capital One points to play with, which leads us to, when would you use these kinds of cards and the points or cash back or whatnot? You just mentioned that you're getting cash back on your dining. So what will you use those for?
Yeah, it's probably just erase the expense on the dining. So that's something that's going to be used. But a lot of times what other members using these for, they're going to look to cover out some of their award taxes or fees that come through on these surcharges. Of course, most of the airlines have some kind of surcharge, not all, but you know, it's something that there's always going to be a cash component. Maybe it's you're going to look at for lodging and it's not part of your normal miles and points chain. So you know, if that's going to be the case, you can certainly use your points to erase those costs there. And I know that's something you've talked about using them before. I think when you were going to Africa, you mentioned there was a place that was not part of that, any given chain that you were a part of, and you used some points. I think you even paid, you earned 10x on some of those. And so it was like it helped make, you know, make the cost wipe out a little bit easier.
Yeah, if you book through the portal, and we'll get to that in a moment, a lot of these cards, you earn a bonus if you book it through the portal. And with Capital One, if you book through their portal with the VentureX, you earn 10x points. And then you can still turn around and erase it, you know, 100 points for every dollar spent. So I'm not going to do the math because I'm calculator dependent. But so it'd be less than 100 points at that point.
But then you can use it for car rentals, train tickets, boat transfer. If you're going to the Maldives or something, you're going to have a plane or a sea transfer, then you can use them for those and wipe out those costs. Because a lot of things that people always seem to forget is that regardless of how many miles and points we use to wipe out so much of these costs, there's still other costs involved in traveling.
Exactly. And that's one of the reasons why I did use a big old chunk of miles to pay for that hotel on Zanzibar. The safari is not cheap. And I wanted to save my cash. I've also used the portal, which we'll be talking about next, to book independent hotels and then erase those. Because when we went to Iceland, all the activities are very expensive and the food is very expensive. So if I can save money for those things I want to do, the whole reason I'm going there is to go do these things and see these things. So I'll take a bit, you know, a worse redemption on these points than what I could get elsewhere, maybe, to be able to go snorkel between the continents, you know, the tectonic plates, which is not cheap. And it's very cold. It's really cool.
And we often talk about the transferable points, but before we get into the transferable points, we have the transferable points travel portals. So you can effectively use your points as cash in some manner.
Right. So Amex, Chase, Citi, Capital One, and I guess also Bill, US Bank and Wells Fargo, they all have travel portals where it's an online travel agency. You book through them to be able to, you can pay cash or you can go ahead and use your points right then. And it's at a fixed value. You know, if you have the Chase Sapphire Reserve, it's 1.5 cents for being able to book through the portal. Chase Sapphire Preferred is 1.25. Amex is 1.1. A lot of people like the Amex Business Platinum card, which gives you the 35% rebate on your points. So they'll book their plane tickets through Amex Travel, pay with your points, you got to have enough, and then they get a 35% rebate and get their points back. I have not done it.
Which isn't quite as nice as like the Sapphire, where if you have, you don't need to have an over amount of points. It just says like, if you have a $300 ticket, you only need to use 20,000 points to pay for that $300 ticket. You don't need to use 30,000 points, then get 10,000 points back. So,
right. But I think that's good for people. I actually have got a friend of ours. They are in, I don't know if they're in Australia or New Zealand. They're down in that neck of the woods right now. And they use their business platinum card to pay for their plane tickets down there because they had very specific dates. They're doing a cruise. They do not do points and miles. And they wanted to fly business class. And it was one of those, okay, they'll use all these points that they've been accumulating on their Amex that they didn't know how to redeem to be able to do this. And, you know, the husband was just tickled that he was going to get this huge rebate. And I just sat there smiling, going, yay, I'm happy for you, you know, knowing how much better they could have used those points for if they had transferred them. However, that worked really well for them. And there's another guy that I know in this hobby that he travels quite a bit for work and he gets reimbursed. So it makes a lot of sense for him to, you know, book through the portal, get, you know, use his points because he generates quite a bit of points with his business and reimburse himself and then get the rebate on the same time. So I've not done it yet. I do have a business platinum card, obviously. So I will have that option if I ever need it, but haven't needed to do it yet.
Yeah. Back in the day, it actually was a super attractive option because it was something that you could, this was before I even applied, you could actually get 2x. So rather than getting the 35% back, you got a 50% rebate, which means that you got a flat 2% back on your points. Now, the only card that does that is the Centurion card, which has like a 7,000 membership introduction fee, and you have to be invited and spend big, big bucks on that card every year. So that's not something most of us are going to have. But you could also, before they devalued it even further, you actually earned 5x on those bookings as well. So it effectively converted your 1.53 cents on the business platinum into about a tenth of a cent more to 1.65 cents. So it's still a pretty good return. And the nice thing about those, when things don't go awry, is that you can earn status with it. So you are using that again, you're using your points as cash. So if you happen to have status or you're working towards status, all of that does count towards your elite qualifications. And a lot of people will look for discounted fares or fare sales or what a lot of people call mistake fares to be able to book these. If you have a $700 round trip business class fare somewhere, you can effectively book it for 45,000 points. I mean, that's a heck of a deal to do that versus something that might normally be 120 to 150,000 points. So those are opportunities as well. Next, we'll get into fixed value airline miles. And those are, again, currencies that are going to have a very direct cash value towards that. Breeze points, I do have some of those from a canceled flight. So those are every breeze point that exists is a 1 cent, is 1 cent each. So you can use those if you had $500 worth of breeze cash. That's effectively 50,000 breeze points. And JetBlue is another program that's typically cash-based. There's a little bit flexibility in the way they count their taxes and fees, but typically you're going to find JetBlue runs between 1.25 to 1.5 cents each. Southwest Rapid Rewards actually have the formula. So some people think you're going to get outsized value, and the way they calculate their taxes and fees into things, sometimes you can get a little bit higher value. I know I've seen in my own calculations as high as almost 2 cents a piece, but there is a very strict formulation. And I want to say it's 100 divided by 84 or 82 now. I don't remember what that is, but it effectively comes out in most cases to 1.3 cents each. And while the big three, American, Delta, and United, you can get outsized value. And that's why we want to collect these airline miles at all, because otherwise, why bother at all if you can get 2% back every day when you're only going to get 1 cent back on an airline mile? But there are times you can get more value out of those. But American, Delta, and United are trending in many ways toward a cash value, a very specific fixed cash value. However, they have not locked those in, and there are still flexible opportunities where you can get much higher value in return out of those.
So the next thing is what we call branded points and miles. And those are going to be your airline specific and hotel specific cards that when you use your Citi AA Platinum card at the grocery store, you are earning AA miles. And AA miles are incredibly valuable, but you can only use them to book through AA. I mean, there's some really poor redemptions you could use with them. I think you can cash all of these out for gift cards. I know a friend of mine, bless her heart, and I don't mean that in the negative Southern way. Whenever we're going to do a girl's trip, she's like, I've got some AA miles. Maybe we can use those to rent a car. I'm like, no, I'm not going to let you do that. Sorry. But, you know, you're locked in to whatever the availability is that program shows on the dates that you want to go, whether it be, you know, AA or United. And if they decide all of a sudden, like Turkish just did, to have a major devaluation, and those are all the points you have, well, you know, you're kind of stuck at that point because that's all you've got.
Yeah, I've been stuck in that position a few times with United. And over the years since I began collecting these back in 2015, I've seen several of these, because you used to be able to do some pretty awesome things. And there are still some awesome things. So with the variable pricing, there are some redemptions that have gotten better for me than what they used to be. But on the overall basis, everything's gotten a lot more expensive.
Of course, sign-up bonuses have gotten a lot better too. So there's a bit of a trade-off there. So finally, and here's where the sweet spot comes in this hobby, and where, you know, we all highly, highly, highly recommend these transferable currencies and flexible awards that will transfer to partners. So who are the various kinds of transferable points?
The five biggest ones we talk about in the community are Bilt Rewards, Amex Membership Rewards, Citi Thank You Points, Chase Ultimate Rewards, and Capital One Venture Miles, with a little bit of Marriott Bonvoy thrown in for good measure, because they still probably have one of the largest transfer bases of airlines. Although I think Air Canada's Aeroplan may have surpassed them. I think they have almost 50 airlines now. So there are different ways you can use these, but the reason we always talk about getting your flexible point currencies first rather than focusing in on an airline, like Angie mentioned, you have Turkish, which just decided to devalue their rewards. Some of their best sweet spots are almost going to be twice as expensive as what they were before. Domestically here, there was a sweet spot, so you could fly economy anywhere in the U.S., including Hawaii, for 7,500 miles, in business class for 12,500 miles. Those are increasing. They're not quite as high of a percentage, but the 7,500 mile is in economy is going to 10,000. The 12,500 in business is going to 15. So it is getting a little bit more expensive. It's not the worst thing we've seen. And relative to what the typical domestic charts are, I mean, those are, if you can't fly United business class for 15,000 miles, you barely can fly economy for 15,000 miles. But these programs can change. They can devalue at any time. And the reason to have these is to have the options. You know, we talked about the travel portals. We talked about being able to cash out. We talked about being able to jump into transfer partners and get that outsized value. If I'm not getting over 2 cents a point in general, there are specifics that, you know, I look into those things. But again, I look at it and say, I could get a fee-free cash back Citi double cash card all day long and get 2% back without doing a thing. I'm not getting at least that much value out of these points and miles that I'm collecting, why am I doing it?
I just had a friend this week booked her very first ever major award redemption. And it's been in the past 3 months, thank you to my tutelage, she and her husband, they got an Amex Gold personal card and a Chase Sapphire Reserve. And they each had enough points to transfer to Virgin. They already had their flight booked to Europe, but they needed a flight home. And they each had enough points to book their flight. All they had ever, and, you know, pay the taxes and fees. All they had ever done in the past was a cashback card. And she's like, but we would get $4,000 a year on our cashback card. I said, that's great. You just opened two cards and you just bought this plane ticket. Go look at how much that plane ticket would be in cash. And she just kind of looked at me and her husband's like, okay, we can open more cards. He thought this has to be a scheme or, you know, some kind of scam. It can't be real. But it truly is. It's the flexibility. You have to be flexible. You know, and you and Allison Tackett talked about it on your interview with her. The more flexible you can be, the greater the savings that you can have. If you have very fixed dates that you have to travel on, okay, so the more options you have to be able to find a flight, if you have transferable points and all these different ones, you can look at all these different airlines and maybe you find something for those very fixed dates. Whereas if you have very fixed dates and all you have are AA miles or United miles, there you go. It's what they have. And if United wants 150,000 points, you better hope you've got 150,000 points per person if you want to use an award ticket.
Yep. I was just talking to a member about a trip to Sydney, and she was trying to collect United miles and said, I want to fly Polaris. And I said, why do you need United miles to do that? The best deal you're ever going to get is 100,000 miles each way. Whereas with Aeroplan, the highest you're ever going to spend, and if you're closer to one of the three hubs that fly to Australia, you might be down to 75,000 points, but the highest you're ever going to pay is 87,500 for the exact same flight. And on top of that, there are often anywhere between 10 and 30% bonuses to Aeroplan. So now instead of spending 200,000 United miles, you could book this for 130 to 140,000 Aeroplan miles. And it's a lot easier to collect when you're, you know, adding these bonuses up and stuff like that to collect all these points when you have that flexibility to make that choice and not do the thing that locks you into just one airline.
Exactly. And like we said, so for these transferable currencies, you need to have one of the cards that allows you to transfer points, because if you have one of those fee-free cards that we talked about under the cashback thing, they're great for earning points, but they won't allow you to transfer. You need to pair them. So we talk about card families where you would have the Chase Freedom card and you have a Chase Sapphire card. If you don't want to pay a high annual fee and you don't think you'll use the benefits under a reserve, then the Chase Sapphire Preferred is $95, and that allows you to transfer all your ultimate rewards to partners. Amex, you know, yeah, some of their cards have incredibly high annual fees, but you can get the fee-free everyday card, which is zero, and you can transfer your membership rewards points. You're not going to earn a whole lot with it. I think, you know, the sign-up bonus isn't that great on that card, but you can transfer points with that one. So, you know, it's helpful to have kind of all of these cards in your portfolio. You know, you need a good mix, and that's where putting together a strategy comes in. You need to understand what each card does for you, and so you can make informed decisions,
right,
and going forward.
And I think, you know, we often talk about this as starting your strategy. And a lot of folks start in the Chase mindset and say, hey, you're going to get locked out. But you also have to kind of look at your upcoming travels and see where that is. And, you know, you were talking about your friend and signing up for cards. And I got my brother and sister-in-law to each sign up for an American Barclays Aviator Red card because it fits their immediate travel needs. It's a simple spend. They can get their spend out of the way and they'll have enough miles to each fly business class home from Korea from our trip this summer. And I don't have to pay for it then. They can pay for it.
And they're probably not going to do this hobby where they're going to be opening 40 cards.
No, they're not quite Dave Ramsey mentality, but they are very slow on opening. I mean, the only card that they've opened in the last 3 years is a Chase Sapphire Preferred. So I said, you know, this is an opportunity where it covers your flights home and you effectively pay the $99 credit card fee and whatever taxes and fees. I think it's like $45 a person to fly business class home. So, you know, those are part of that strategy and making sure you understand. We talk about understanding what you want to do and how you want to do it. And that's a case where, you know, this was something that was going to cover their immediate flight and not leave them stranded because another Chase card wasn't going to do them any good in this particular instance.
So how do you know who transfers, where things transfer to? Mike has put together a handy little transfer partner matrix. I have my printout right here next to my computer, laminated so I can refer to it frequently.
And Mike keeps that updated in the group, and I'll link this into the award.travel website. So that's where it's always guaranteed to be most up to date, is on the award.travel website, which we don't really talk about too much because we just keep some of our handy charts and stuff there. But that will be linked into the show notes. You can get your own free chart, which is keeping you informed of the transfer partners, who the airlines are, what their partners are. And this is probably one of the most used tools and reshared across all of Facebook is Mike's tool on this transfer partner award chart. And let's hop into the tip of the week.
So this is my own personal tip of the week. So be flexible with your card strategy and don't take denials personally. If you start playing this game, it's going to happen. It happens to all of us. You get declined for a card. I mean, back when we first started, P2 got declined for a Marriott Bonvoy card because I didn't know about that 524 rule. And they're like, nope, sorry, folks. So be flexible. Be willing to pivot to a new card or just to use your existing portfolio when you start getting declined on things. So be flexible. I've had to do that a lot recently.
And with that, where can everyone find us, Angie?
You can find us in the 100,000 plus member Award Travel 101 Facebook community.
And for more intermediate and advanced strategies, join Award Travel 201.
Or you can book time with our team. Check out Award Travel 101 for specific strategies on card opening or on how to learn how to book award travel.
You can also email us at contactawardtravel@gmail.com.
And if learning in person is more your style, our next meetup is located in San Antonio, Texas on April 26th through the 28th. And we have opened up a few more tickets for members. So get on the wait list or go ahead and buy a ticket right away. Get your hotel. You can learn more about it at Talk About a Fiesta on Eventbrite.
Yeah, and if you're looking for a new card, don't forget to support the Award Travel 101 podcasting community. We appreciate that support here in the group. And we want to thank you for listening and tuning in. And we'll catch you next time. Safe travels.
Bye. Have a good weekend.